Welcome to the Magic and Mindfulness Podcast. You're joining me, Amy Maxwell, on my journey of understanding the world of light magic in order to cultivate mindful living. I'm so excited for you to join me on this path of discovery. Hi everyone. Today I'm speaking to Ashley Ray, who is the founder and CEO of Mala Collective, which is a global spiritual company that sells mala beads and other products to a cult celebrity following, from the likes of Justin Bieber to Whitney Port, to name a few. And Ashley's mantra with Mala Collective is about bringing tools out into the world that help support mindfulness and a meditation practice. I really admired Ashley's openness during our chat today, because as someone who is the founder of a meditation-based company, I really expected her to be a master meditator, but she's quite the opposite actually, and she was really open with me about her journey and her struggles with meditation. So during our chat, we discuss the origins of the mala bead, the different types of meditation that we can practice, and the resilience to what it's taken Ashley to get her spiritual business to where it is today. So I really hope that today's chat about creating a global spiritual business from the ground up is going to be insightful for those of you who are entrepreneurs, or maybe those of you who are just thinking about getting started on a new project or an idea. So I hope you enjoy this one. Let's do it. Let's start the show. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really well. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course, I'm honored and I'm grateful. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So Ashley, for listeners, I think they're going to be really interested in our conversation today, because I think a lot of the listeners are also entrepreneurs who have followed me through the seasons, and a lot of them have reached out to me about starting their own businesses as well. Or they're thinking about setting up their own business. Maybe that's in spirituality, maybe it's kind of connected in the future. So it's going to be really helpful and inspiring to hear from you today about how you came to set up your own global business, which is Mala Collective. And as the founder and CEO, I know that things probably have started somewhere before you've hit, you know, a peak, I think, of where you are now. Maybe it's not your peak, but we could talk about that in a minute. I'd love to hear from you. But yeah, I would just love to know more about you and how the Mala Collective started actually from the ground up.
Well, I mean, I always find the founder story so interesting. And mine is almost, you know, when you tell a story and it feels like a lifetime ago, it doesn't feel like you anymore. That's kind of what it feels like. So Mala Collective started 11 years ago, which even saying that out loud, I never thought I would say that. I used to be a journalist, as I was telling you briefly before we started, and my dream in life was to be a journalist. That's all I wanted to be since I was a little kid, and I think it's because I was nosy, always nosy, and I realized you could get paid for asking questions, and so I became a journalist, went to university in the UK, and ended up coming back to Canada. I'm from Vancouver, and I started covering murder trials, and in both Liverpool and in Vancouver, outside of Vancouver. And murder trials was never my dream. My dream was, you know, covering the red carpet or being in entertainment. And then I wanted to do everything. I wanted to experience every form of human life, from, you know, entertainment to sports to investigative reporting. And murder never crossed my mind as something I'd ever do. And it became a big part of my life. And it became very intense, as I'm sure you can imagine. I ended up winning a national award and I quit journalism. And I think there was a really profound moment in the last trial that I covered, where the mom was sharing about her daughter, who the trial was about. This was the most healing experience I've ever had. And it felt to me like a karmic loop had closed. I can barely put it into words. It was just I'd actually never talk about this. I'm not sure why I'm going to this, but it was such a profound moment of, oh, I think this chapter is done now. And not in a way of, I can never learn anymore. I've won an award. I'm the best. It was very knowledgeable of, wow, that played such a path in someone's life. And that level of connection was so deep for me. And my partner and I, we were in our early 20s. And so we quit our jobs. And he had hit a peak in his career. And we kind of hit, I don't want to be obscene with this, like some sort of quarter life crisis where we're like, wow, this is what you've been working for so long. And we got it. And is this what we're supposed to be doing? Because it doesn't feel like it anymore, which is quite an overwhelming feeling to feel that level of uncertainty. So we went backpacking and for 6 months, lived in a van in New Zealand, went across Europe, ended up in Bali. Probably not the most thought out flight path, but we ended up in Bali anyway. And I think most people on some sort of spiritual soul seeking journey end up in Bali. It's such a beautiful island to be held by. And we fell in love with mindfulness and meditation. And I think most people think I started the company because I love meditation, but this is not true. I started it because I was just starting to learn about meditation.
Yeah.
And so we fell in love with these mala beads. If you don't know what mala beads are, it's like a string of beads that you can use in meditation. And this has been around for thousands of years in Hinduism and Buddhism. We did not invent this by any means, but we'd never seen them before. We fell in love with them. And we bought a whole bunch of them, realizing different gemstones have different healing qualities. Bought them for all of our friends. We're like, oh, this person would love this. This person would love this. And we're flying from Bali to Thailand. And on the plane, a lady sat down beside us and said, your aura is so beautiful. Can I chat with you? And she ended up being the woman that made the beads we bought in Bali. So it was, it was just pure serendipity. And I'm such a believer in serendipity. And when I tell that story, I get the response a lot of like, wow, I wish something would fall into my lap, like it fell into your lap. Mm-hmm. And I understand what that means. And I know how it can look like 11 years of a business fell into my lap, but it's the starting of it. There was serendipity and a beautiful connection. I'm leaving out 11 years of like hustle and crying and don't know what I'm doing and ups and downs. But that moment of serendipity, I truly believe we can all have it every single day if we are simply open to it.
Yeah.
I think that these moments happen for us and our gut reaction is, oh, it's too good to be true. Or I could never, or maybe next year, or maybe, you know, maybe somebody else, this would be better for them. Like we often go into a place of distrust or the too good to be true mentality. And when I think about that now, how I must have been in a really open place to receive that.
Yeah.
Because that whole it's too good to be true does resonate with me. And I really now try to practice yes as much as possible because I know how much it can change a life path. I never thought I would be an entrepreneur. I didn't know a business owner 11 years ago. I didn't know what the word entrepreneur was. Now it's a really sexy word.
Yeah.
It was not 11 years ago. I kept calling myself a journalist for like 4 years because I was embarrassed. Wow. To be an entrepreneur. Yeah.
That's an amazing story, Ashley. I have so many questions off the bat of that. so awesome. And I think that's really like humbling to hear as well. And just, you know, that it took you that time to kind of process everything and also, you know, how you kind of went through, you know, the majority of your life and you weren't just an entrepreneur from like 17, which I think we see a lot now with like social media and like kids making loads of money. And it's, really fucking annoying. No, I'm just kidding.
I'd be so random having a channel opening toys. I would just be opening dresses and trying dresses. You know what? I bet
just gifting and unboxing. Yeah, exactly. No, but I wanted to come back to and actually fascinating around. And thank you for sharing that about you know the poignant point in your life with the you know that final the murder investigation. I would love to know a little bit more because I have also moved through something similar as well as part of my journey of having this real feeling that I needed to leave my job and just stop. Would you be able to explain what the process was a little bit more from that kind of initial pull to leaving to go on your travels? How did that feel? And how did you know it was the right thing? Or did you know it was the right thing to do, I guess?
Such a good question. You know, when I came back from that trip, I, funnily enough, went back to work and just knew it was the wrong thing. So that first parting at the newspaper was was very much, I can't explain it other than just a deep knowing it's time now. And the level of, and there's so many other things. I mean, we had been planning a trip for like a year and been saving up. It's not like all of a sudden, like, let's leave tomorrow. Thank goodness we've got a fat bank account. That was not our reality at all. We were hustling. I was working full time and hustling like two other jobs on the side so we could save money and pay rent and go traveling. And traveling was a dream we had. So it probably made it a little bit easier in that moment to feel that closure. And, you know, I don't want to get too woo-woo here, but I so believe in intuition. And during COVID, I did an intuitive training because I believe that there's so many ways that we receive information, but we don't know how to synthesize it. So if you're like, oh, intuition, that's like woo-woo. I'm also a very analytical mind as much as I am a woo-woo mind. And I couldn't let my analytical mind go in this intuition training without understanding what it is. And the summary that I came away with, which my intuition teacher was like, why do you need this? It's all the ways in which we receive seen and unseen and known and unknown information, how we synthesize it in our body. And I think in that moment of leaving, I just knew it was time. And I think that the second one was more of the breaking point. So I came back, went into the same role, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember why I left before. And that was simply a fact of came back from traveling. Oh wow, we should help that cool hippie woman on the plane. Oh, we need money to do that. So maybe we should go back to work. So we went back to work, and this part is really funny. So I went back to work, realized I didn't like it, went into a job I loved journalism. It's not that I didn't like it. There was just something there, that block was still there for me. Went to a different job, full-time, paid me way more in PR. That's like going to the dark side as a journalist.
It is.
And at this point, I'm working on Mala every night, coming home 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. And at this point, like, it's still not really, I mean, what's a real business? It was still like, you know, we're slinging Malas out of a spare bedroom or basement suite, right? And I remember the breaking point of when I had to quit that. And that was specific to entrepreneurship. I am writing about self-love and mindfulness and well-being, and I fucking hated everyone. I was not living one word of what I was teaching or helping, you know, I'm using air quotes, helping people to embody, because I probably wasn't helping. I was verbalizing this lifestyle, but I wasn't actually living it. So I wasn't embodying the thing.
Right.
And that moment was so curious because I was heartbroken. There was no moment of I have to do this today. It was this slow burn that I was torturing myself. And again, I always think this question is so interesting when I hear people ask, because there is a fact of you need to feel safe and pay your bills. And then there's also the breaking point that no one can tell you, you know, I quit my job on a Tuesday at 3 p.m. when I knew I had $10,000 in the bank account. Like that was not it. It was just it was a feeling and a conversation with my partner at the time of, okay, what are we going to do here? Because this isn't working. We're both hitting our wall here.
Yeah.
And now when I look back on it, and I coach a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners around this moment, there's a true feeling of safety that's required. And there's a discomfort. Like I believe in the all in, and it's curious, both times I quit because of Mala, like both the newspaper and PR, the people around me out of love said, but what are you going to do when they stop buying your little beads? And I didn't get one person celebrate me quitting. And again, this is 11 years ago, maybe 10 years ago now at this point. And I was in what we would call like the Bible Belt. So a very religious area. And so Buddhism and Hinduism, spirituality and mindfulness was also like very much so frowned upon. So I was not in a thriving location to start this business. But the people that were saying those things, I know now they were saying out of love, and I knew in that moment too, but it was also out of fear. So not only are we grappling with, ooh, do I quit now? We're grappling with people around us that want to love us and protect us. And Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx, talks about this in a really beautiful way, that when we're plotting these big dreams, to not share them with people because people will often out of love tell us not to do it. I don't believe in that. I'm a chronic overshare, but I do believe that future me is my backup plan. So whenever somebody said, what are you going to do? I'm like, you know what? I figured it out this far in life. I'll figure it out after. I'll get a new job. I will hustle. I will do this. And I think just that deep knowing of I've got my back.
Yeah.
And future Ashley's going to figure it out with me. And the next iteration of this was going into Mala full time. Well, I did a part time. I ripped the bandit off really slowly just to, you know, make it more
personal. Yeah.
Part time. And then down to doing Mala full time. We moved into the city because we were living in the country. And I went back to waiting tables. Now that was an ego hit. That was, ooh, I'm a national award-winning journalist starting this company that I super believe in and back to waiting tables. And I did that for 7 years. There's no shame. I am so grateful for every table I've ever waited because I went through university. I traveled the world. Like that afforded me so much opportunity.
Yeah.
But in that moment, the ego hit of I'm taking 5 steps back here. That was very confusing to me. And again, it was, I'm working my butt off. I need a little bit of social because I'm inside all day in front of a laptop.
Yeah.
And my partner moved away so he could make more money so we could fund the business. And it was just a really interesting dynamic. I mean, this is such an embarrassing story, but I was working at this restaurant and everyone's beautiful. All of the women are so beautiful and it's a well-known place. Like men go in to talk to women. And out of, I don't know if it was ego or my, like, it was so stupid. I'm actually so embarrassed to share this. Out of like my resistance to work, they like refused to shave my legs. And I'm like, oh yeah? Yeah, I have my own business. I'm not here to be hot. I can do this on my own. I don't need you to hit on me and give, like, there was such a resistance to me being there. And that not shave my legs thing, now I do out of laziness. But in that moment was out of ego. Like every part inside me was like, why are you here? You're so much better than this, which is not true. That's not true.
Mm.
So all these iterations of letting go of careers and letting go of versions of self. And finally one day I was like, okay, I'm here out of choice and I'm grateful for it. And then the day that I chose to leave was the day I chose to leave. And that wasn't as scary. And I think it was like little steps of like going from a career, going out of part-time, going to something that supplemented some money. And I think we often, you know, in my experience of coaching entrepreneurs, we put a lot of pressure on the thing that we love to work right away.
Yeah.
And there's this, I'm not going to even try to remember the quote, but a story about an artist where his version of success was painting and just finishing the painting was success. But then as soon as he shifted the success metric to monetizing the painting, he became a failure.
Yeah.
So this idea that where we put the success metric, you know, at the beginning, it was just starting Mala, just getting one thing out there. And then it's like, well, now all of a sudden, because I decided to quit my job today, now it has to be making enough money today. So I think that there's like this slower understanding I had to go through of what is success.
Yeah.
Can I be okay with success this week, just being getting through X, Y, and Z and not it needing to be a $1 million company in the first year? Because that's just not, I mean, some people can do that.
Some people can, but it's, And I think, thank you so much for sharing that, Ashley. And I think it's really important to share these kind of stories because obviously we do see the glossy, you know, the glossy Instagram and the beautiful products. And I think it's important to share that it has been a huge journey. And even like, going to wait tables again, I think that I would also really struggle with that. And I think that's a really important life lesson is, you know, to do that. And you also mentioned as part of one of your, you know, when you were kind of moving away from your jobs and slowly integrating more and more with Mala, that there was this sort of feeling like you weren't really living with the brand, with the essence of your brand, you know, purpose and vision. What was the point where you did feel like actually, I guess it was great that you were aware of that, but was there a point where you started to really embody Mala and what you're doing, you know, in its fullness? Was that when you fully took the leap into doing it full time?
That is such a beautiful question. I have never been asked that before. Thank you for that. So my answer is maybe a couple of years ago.
Really? Wow.
And so, and there is a bit of shame in that, so one of the big things that one of our biggest collections is I'm Enough. And that came out of me feeling like I wasn't enough. So most of the products that we make are my reflections around, you know, what would I think I need for meditation, or how am I feeling mm-hmm. right now? And a big thing I felt for so many years was I wasn't good enough to run the business.
Wow.
And that lack of enoughness was years and years and years and years of self-doubt. And when people often ask, like, what was the biggest barrier in Mala? I'm like, me. It was always me and my mind. And this feeling or this belief that everybody else is doing so much better than me, or I should be here, or I need to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exaggerating. I would be weeping most nights thinking, I wish somebody else would just do this. Why isn't someone else running this company? Why hasn't somebody else started this thing yet? Why do I have to do it? And don't they know that I don't know what I'm doing? And that people would email and I'd be hustling and, you know, doing emails at 1 a.m. and people would send in these heartfelt stories of, you know, this mala got me through divorce. It got me through coming out to my parents, through a sex change, through abuse, through my parents, whatever, any level of transition or change in life. And all I could feel is, oh my God, they think that I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And now I look back on that, all they were looking for is for me to hold space for them, which I did. Mm. But in that moment, all I could do is judge myself, that I feel like such a phony, that people are reaching out to me for healing and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I do believe there's some quote around like people that can't do teach. And I don't like that. I always reframe it as we teach what we're seeking. And I went on a really deep path of seeking meditation and mindfulness, because again, I did not start the company with a deep meditation practice.
Yeah.
So that feeling of feeling phony was so ingrained and it was so deep in me. And meditation, for anybody listening, was not cool 10 years ago.
It wasn't, no, it's true.
It was like this weird hippie thing. And
yeah.
I was even like, ooh, should I wear these malas out? Like the thing mm-hmm. that I'm in love with and
yeah.
my business, I was still nervous to wear in public. So there was so many years where the integration had to happen. And I'm not exaggerating, maybe 3 years ago, it clicked that I mm-hmm. went through so many meditation trainings, intuition trainings. You know, I work with 3 different coaches. I still work with coaches. Like I so believe
yeah.
that we can't do everything on our own. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be that. And maybe I'm being hard on myself thinking it just clicked 3 years ago, but I now, you know, I teach a lot of meditation. I do coaching and
yeah.
this has come up for me maybe the past 3 or 4 years. And I think that being in service and giving back has helped me like really click into the business more in a deeper, profound way. But that's not saying, you know, since the business started, my practice has changed so much. I would say a couple of years in, I really started exploring meditation on so many levels through my own practice. And I think that curiosity of being a journalist is what led me through that.
Yeah.
But the embodiment of the brand, like, what a beautiful question. I'm so curious how other people would answer that.
I think in terms of what you just said? Because I think it's that. And thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing mm-hmm. that. Honestly, I was like, I could feel myself like welling up a bit, because I think it's like, wow. Yeah. Just how we see people on the surface, and then how actually mm-hmm. we, especially as women, I think I can mm-hmm. definitely relate to that of just, mm-hmm. yeah, even just some, you know, achievements that we've all been through of maybe feeling like they're never good enough. And actually it sounds like from your journey, that you kind of just at one point, it just felt like, okay, I am enough. And then that's, I don't know. Do you feel that way now? Cause I hope so.
That's also such a curious question. You know, I would say one of the biggest turning points was I was doing this meditation and this voice, just get over yourself. And I'm like, okay, thank you.
Rude.
And it was a bit rude, a bit bossy, but I guess that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice was just saying you playing in fear is so self-indulgent because you're robbing so many people of this experience. And that was such a beautiful download. And I'm not saying that moment, ooh, I'm enough now. Mm-hmm. And even in this moment, ooh, I'm enough now. No,
yes,
I don't believe that. I think that it's so funny. Somebody asked me once, like, I don't want to feel like I'm not enough anymore. How do I just feel like I'm enough? I'm like, yeah, I get it. But also I believe that every up-leveling we go through, a bit of like fear comes with us. So that feeling of not enough, if we reframe it as, oh, that means I'm growing and expanding and going through discomfort. What a gift. What a gift that we're not stagnating. And that level of, ooh, I wonder if I can do it. Because I think every up-leveling in life, we question our enoughness. And am I enough to run a business? Am I enough to be a meditation teacher? Am I enough to be a coach? Am I enough to be a partner? Am I enough to be a husband, a wife, a mom, a grandma, a grandpa? Like every phase, every title, every way we describe who we are, there's a level of, ooh, am I enough to do that?
Yeah.
To be that. So I think that, you know, in my experience of this journey, it's not, am I feeling like I'm enough now? My process is when that voice comes in, I can close that loop faster now. I can close that negative self spiral so much faster.
Yeah.
And I've learned tools to step back into compassion and self-love when that voice starts up. And so, you know, some of those things, I'm sitting at a long table right now, a very simple thing, move to the other side of the table, like the pattern interruption of just getting up and moving.
Mm-hmm.
If you're somewhere where you can go for a walk, go for a walk, like quite the smallest things. It's not this huge secret. It's get up and move. Of course, meditation has helped me so much.
Yeah.
Journaling has helped me so much. One of my coaches, when I go through these not enoughness spirals, he's like, what are you ingesting for books? And what are you listening to? The things that we put into our brain have such an impact on how we think. And so
100%.
Every morning I read a chapter of the 7 spiritual laws, and I only started doing that maybe 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 5 minutes a day. And then I gratitude journal, and those things, the gratitude journaling and meditation have been the biggest helps for me.
Yeah. Beautiful. Oh, well, thank you for being so honest about, you know, the company and this, and the journey. Cause I think that's so, so refreshing. And I'm sure that's going to help so many people when, you know, on their path. Cause I think it is, I mean, I'm definitely one of those people. I would love everything to be solved overnight and just everything to fall into place. Of course, we can get on the path, but we still need to put the work in. And you've definitely done that. And congratulations for such a successful brand, because, you know, you've got like celebrity clients that are wearing your products. And I think just to spread that awareness to such a wide reaching audience is fucking amazing. So you should be proud of where you are and where you've got to. Yeah. Well, actually, I would love... Good. I'm glad to hear that affirmation. Well, I would love to actually speak to you more about the products actually, and your meditation practice. I know you've just touched on it a little bit. And I have a few more questions on the entrepreneurship, but maybe we can close with that as just some takeaways. But I also struggle with meditation, to be honest. It's something I love, and I know that it is beneficial when I do it. But when I get out of sync with it, it's very noticeable. I would love to know now, as part of your routine, how does meditation play a part to your routine? Do you have like a fixed schedule? How do you flow with meditation now?
Thank you for sharing that. Every single person struggles with meditation. That's like the big secret. You know, whenever I teach, if I teach at an event or a festival or something, there's maybe like 100 people there. I'll say, does anybody have any questions? No questions. Everybody will line up and ask the exact same question. So we all have the same questions and blocks. And usually they're like, oh, I think I'm doing it wrong. Or my mind's wandering. Or like, I'm just not very good at this. And those are all self-judgment related questions.
Uh-huh.
It's such a practice of self-judgment. So I will share a little bit about like tips on meditation. Then I'll share a bit about my routine. So
beautiful.
Whenever people are asking how to start. Actually, I'm going to start with mine so that you can kind of see what I do. My meditation practice has changed so much. And I think that the impression people have is that it should look a certain way. And again, should is such a judgy word.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what people think. I should be sitting there with no movement, like 20 minutes on a cushion. Mm-hmm. And that's what I used to think meditation was. I was like, I can't sit there for 20 minutes. My knees hurt. I don't know, maybe like I'm hungry or my leg falls asleep. Those are all very normal things. I have noticed, you know, one of my favorite things to do when I'm traveling is take a meditation class everywhere I go and try and find the wildest, weirdest, most out there version of meditation. Because there's so many entry points to meditation. And so I think that the way people frame it is what actually sets us up for failure. So if we look at meditation as I've got to sit there for 20 minutes without movement, okay, and no thoughts, oof, okay, that's hard. Or let's reframe it as, I'm going to take 10 minutes this morning. I'm going to take 10 minutes to meet myself. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, it doesn't feel that tangible. So like, what does that really mean? If we reframe it as 8 minutes, I mean, I don't care how long you do it for 2 minutes, do whatever works for you. If you're reframing it as, I'm going to take 8 minutes to sit with myself and just come back to myself and take this moment just for me as the sacred time. Okay. That maybe is a little bit less pressure than mm-hmm. sitting with no thoughts. I had one teacher draw this beautiful illustration, and I'll verbalize it for you how I draw it now. But I imagine a bicycle wheel, and the middle of the wheel, like the center of the wheel, and all the spokes coming out of it. So the center of the wheel is our focal point in meditation. So that focal point can be our breath. It can be a mala, that thing that we make that we did not invent, the mala beads, or your mantra. A mantra can be a word or a phrase or a sound. I really love I am enough, those positive affirmations. Mm-hmm. And it's proven that the more we repeat them, the more we start to rewire our brain. So the focal point being the center of the wheel, our breath, our mantra, our mala. So we're focusing, we're focusing, we're focusing. And then our mind wanders off. And that's the spoke on the wheel. Our mind's wandering, you know, there's a horn outside. Oh, I wonder what's going on out there. And then the tire, you get to where the rubber meets the wheel. And in that moment, that's the realization of, oh man, my mind wanders. So you have two choices there. The choice is, oh my God, I'm the worst. I should have been meditating. Mm-hmm. I'm way out here. No wonder this. I suck at this. Or, oh, okay, my mind wandered. Just come back, my love. Because then, I don't know, 3 seconds later, it's going to happen again. You're going to hear a dog, or your tummy's going to grumble, or your leg's going to fall asleep, or you're going to replay a conversation last week and have a really solid comeback that you wish you said. Anything, whatever comes up in your brain. So imagine a bicycle wheel, and there's 200 spokes on that wheel in 10 minutes. Okay, that's a normal meditation. The point of meditation is not to have no spokes on that wheel. What if you reframed it as, okay, tomorrow, maybe I'll have 180. And maybe the next day I'll have 170. Mm-hmm. And then maybe the next day I'll have 300 because it was a crazy day. So what we're doing by removing those spokes on that wheel is creating a little bit of space in between our thoughts.
Right.
So okay. We're not eliminating the thoughts. We're creating a little bit of space. And Deepak Chopra talks about this as the space between our thoughts. And I always thought, well, isn't that nice? But what does that mean? Like, that's such a non-tangible concept, the space between our thoughts. So if you visualize it as, you know, creating more space between the spokes and the wheel. So why do we want that space? We want that space so that we can drop into our body, so we can have those intuitive hits. We can have those aha moments. And if someone's listening saying, oh, I've never had an intuitive hit. Well, you've definitely had an aha moment, you know, driving the car, or in the shower, or washing the dishes, doing something repetitive where you kind of zone out. You know how you're yep. driving and all of a sudden you show up and you're like, oh God, how did I even get here? Mm-hmm. But on that drive, you're like, oh yeah, I should text that person. I should call that person. Or whatever the realization is. So many entrepreneurs actually credit those aha moments in meditation to what's taken their career to the next level. So that deep knowing, we're creating space for that deep knowing to come up. Because when we're running so quickly, we don't have spaciousness
for sure.
For those aha moments. So if we reframe meditation as a little bit more spaciousness,
yep.
maybe it becomes a little more appealing or a little less intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
Another way I frame it is that moment when we hit the rubber or we hit the tire, that becomes the practice. Are we going to judge? Are we going to practice compassion? So if we're having 200 moments, maybe that's 200 practices of self-love. 200 times to practice self-compassion, 200 times to say, it's okay, my love, just come back. Most of our thoughts are from yesterday. So if we start speaking to ourselves with kindness and we practice 200 phrases of, I love you, it's okay, versus 200 phrases of, you're the worst.
You suck. Yeah.
You suck. Mm-hmm. What a beautiful practice. Hey, I'm going to sit here for 8 minutes and just practice being nice to myself.
Yeah.
We're really nice to our friends. We're nice to most people, you know, but not really to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So if we reframe meditation as a practice of self-love. And then the last way I frame it is those aha moments, we're creating trust with ourselves. We're actually building the capacity to listen to our voice. We're building that capacity to create space to receive the download and build trust. So again, going back to how I started the business, when people say, you know, it must be nice, or maybe, you know, I could never, that would happen to somebody else, but not me. We're not creating that trust with ourselves that we can make a decision and follow through, or that we don't trust the universe. And if someone's listening going, no, I trust myself, well, I'm sure that you've had that experience of like, I knew I shouldn't have done this, or I knew I should have gone left, or, you know, deep down in my gut, I didn't trust that person, or deep down in my gut, I knew that, but I didn't do it. That's a disconnection from our intuition, that we don't know or listen to ourselves. So I like to frame meditation in different ways that embody more ease and a bit more of the divine feminine versus sitting there for 20 minutes without thinking.
Struggling. And so
I hope that's a softer approach to meditation.
I love that.
And it feels a little less judgy, because I think we judge a lot.
Definitely. And,
I mean, I guess like the functional or the tactical, like how to's, I would say tie it to a habit you've already built, because building a new habit can be really difficult. So if that's turning the kettle on in the morning, go and meditate for 2 minutes. Like, do something you already do. Brush your teeth, meditate, like a trigger point that you already do. Start small. It can be 2 minutes, it can be 8 minutes, it can be 20 minutes. And then I would say, like, just be easy on yourself when you miss it. We do a lot of free guided meditation challenges, and we notice that when people miss a day, they judge themselves so harshly, they just don't come back. And it's like, if a friend was saying, I went to the gym 3 days this week and I missed a day, I'm never going again, you'd be like, no, you could probably go back next week. It's okay. We just don't treat ourselves with as much love when we miss something. We're an all or nothing.
That's so true.
Mentality.
I don't know why that is actually with meditation, that we feel like we have to do it every day. I mean, I also share that, and I definitely don't do it every day. I try my best, but sometimes it's just not possible. No. Oh, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Okay. Also, I'll share how I look at meditation. I mean, I'm very lucky. I have a meditation space in my apartment. Mm-hmm. When I sublet an apartment in New York, and I built a little meditation space in his apartment, which is
amazing.
I'm sure he loves it now, but you don't need our products to meditate, which I think is really cool. You actually don't need anything. You can use a cushion from your couch or your bed.
Yeah.
But what I do love is I don't have to think about where I'm going to sit. And meditation already brings up so much resistance for us.
Yeah.
That if we're like, oh, should I sit on a chair? Should I sit on the couch? No, I have my meditation space. It's my safe space. It's one less block to think about. So I notice for me, my routine is I love meditating in the morning. I love meditating at night. So I just kind of feel out what I want, what I need. I love sitting on my cushions and using my mala. There's days, usually when it's more like fall, winter, I like an indoor meditation. I love listening to guided meditations. I notice that when my mind is really squirrely, having somebody else's voice that I can surrender to is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Same with the mala. The mala is a really beautiful tool for beginners.
Actually, I wanted to ask you about the malas, because I just got one of the malas. I have the clarity one. It's beautiful. I would love to know, because I have never used a mala bead before, and I've been meditating for quite a long time. What would your suggestion be actually with using the mala? I don't know anything. So
if you hold up the tassel, there's the tassel, and then there's one bead, and then there's 108 beads in the loop.
108.
So
okay.
There's the one bead there beside the tassel. That's called the guru bead.
Okay.
And you start with that facing you, and you start with the bead beside it. So essentially the mala is like a physical timer, and you turn it through your fingers. You use your, like I use my thumb and pull it towards me, and I inhale and exhale on each bead. So then when you've done 108 inhale exhales, I like to use a mantra on each bead. So I like to inhale, I am, and exhale the word that I need to call in that day. So when I'm sitting in my practice, I'll take a seat and I'll go, okay, what do I want to call in today? If it's I want to feel love, or I want to feel supported, I inhale, I am, and exhale love, or I am supported. And repeating that 108 times, you come back to the tassel, and that represents a full meditation. So it becomes this physical thing to bring your focus back to. So when your mind's wandering, you come back to this tactile thing. And what's so beautiful about it, like I mentioned earlier, is people credit so much of their change to this tool, to this beautiful thing, when really they're the ones that were creating the change, but they're meditating into it. So I think it represents so much for so many people. And I mean, I still use my mala. I find it such a gift. I wear it every day, and it's my reminder of my practice through my day. And then there's days where I don't use my mala. There's days where I feel really compelled to do a walking meditation. And I would say only in the past 2 years have I started to really explore, I don't feel like sitting today, not out of resistance. I love my practice.
Yeah.
I think I want to go for a walk and listen to a meditation. So I do that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel compelled to explore, you know, sound bath meditations, to do meditations laying down. I really love, the past year, I've been really in love with Joe Dispenza's meditations.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks a lot about visualizing future you in our purpose and not being defined by who we were yesterday, but being defined by a vision of the future that we want to create. And that for me, it's so funny. It's like we go through phases of like how we dress or how we do our hair. Like I'm in the phase right now of Joe Dispenza and doing mm-hmm. a lot of walking meditations. And I was talking to one of my healers about it, and she was saying it makes sense in spring, summer, that we want to spring forward and move.
Right.
So I noticed that I really embrace moving meditations when the seasons change. And I really embrace, you know, really ritualistic bubble bath with crystals and reading a book and doing meditation when there's a moon cycle or when, you know, it's fall, winter. So I think that there's something really beautiful and divine about your meditation doesn't have to be the same each day.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my teachers was saying, meditate every day for 200 days and then let's talk about how you're sitting. It doesn't matter. Mm. The practice is building the habit. If you sit on a cushion, if you sit in a chair, if you lay down, you know, he always joked, if you do it in bed and fall asleep, like the worst thing that happens is you fall asleep.
It's sleep,
and
yeah.
He calls that meditation, which is amazing. I love that. So there's,
yeah.
there's no, you know, there's no right or wrong, but there's definitely things that can help. And
yeah.
the mala is a tool to help. The cushions are a tool, not only to physically like hold your hips, but mm-hmm. hold physical space for you. And
yeah.
the crystals, you don't need crystals, but if you want something physical that represents your intention in your home and inspires you, like the way I look at meditation now is much like therapy, that,
yeah.
you know, if you have a therapy session, you're not healed at the end of that therapy session. The therapy kicks up all this stuff and you get to integrate it and embody it before your next session. So now I look at meditation as it's this day long experience, the day long practice of practicing the mindfulness, mm-hmm. of practicing the awareness. So the meditation is the moment where maybe I get a download, maybe I just get a cramped leg, maybe I have a breakthrough, maybe something gets kicked up and it's uncomfortable, but then the integration and embodiment is the in-between.
Yes.
Versus, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people ask me, how do I have these aha moments in meditation? And I teach a lot of entrepreneurs and type A's, like, where's the ROI on meditation? Which I just find the most hilarious answer. And it's no different than you go to the gym once and you don't see the result after one gym session.
Right, exactly.
It's after the continuity and it's the
yeah.
in between and it's the consistency of showing up for yourself. So
yeah.
I hope that demystifies it a little bit, because I yeah. definitely had so many things in my head of what it should be and needed to be.
Super helpful, Ashley. Yeah, no, for sure. That you've given so many tools and tips for people who can take that away and maybe haven't been inspired by little nuggets. I love the sort of idea. I was just making me think, so I do have like a specific space in my home as well that I've carved out for meditation, but yeah, I've been feeling a bit restless with it lately. I'm going to try the walking one. I think that's a really nice thing to do. Well, I would love to end with just thank you. You've shared also about the mala beads. I'm definitely going to try those out as part of my practice. But just to end on, any pointers for entrepreneurs who are thinking or have started their own business, is there anything you wish you would have known that you would be able to share with our listeners?
I would say, so first off, I don't believe in giving advice, because we all know our businesses better than somebody else. And I wish I had believed that in myself sooner.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that I noticed I did when I was starting, and I still do this in different variations, is giving my power away to other people, thinking that they knew better than I do. And I wish I just believed in myself a little bit more. One thing this is so funny, I've just started surrounding myself with mentors in year 11. Took me 10 years to figure that one out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing that now, not necessarily for advice or not believing in myself, but for understanding, whoa, I don't need to do this alone. So mm-hmm. I think there's a difference between, you know, how I used to approach people before, thinking like, oh my God, I'm so desperate, can you help me? I'm so tired, I have no fucking clue what I'm doing, I need help. that's still okay. But I put them on this pedestal thinking they knew all the answers.
Right.
When truly I knew my business better than they did. And in a 20-minute coffee, they could say, you should do this, you should do this, you should do this. And I would do it. And then after I'd leave, like, why did I do that? I already knew that wasn't the right thing to do. I just was so low on myself. So now when I seek feedback from people, it's not necessarily advice. It's more, can you share your experience of what it felt like when you were scaling? Can you share your experience of what you did when you had cash flow problems? Can you share your experience of what you did when you didn't feel like a strong leader? Like anything, any low point. And for me, it's really humanized the entrepreneurial journey because it can feel so lonely. So I would say the biggest takeaway I have is surrounding yourself with people that can share the human experience with you that are going through it in a confidential way, because I know it can be really vulnerable to share a lot of our fears.
Mm-hmm.
And surrounding yourself with people that want the best for you and mentors, and just being aware that you know, deep down you already know. So just not giving your power away to people thinking that they know better than you.
Yeah, beautiful. That's amazing. Thank you, Ashley. I think it comes full cycle, doesn't it, to your story as well. Just trusting yourself and believing in yourself more, because ultimately, I guess we're the greatest teachers is ourselves. So thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I loved it. And I'm sure the listeners are going to take away so much. So thank you so much, Ashley.
Thank you. Thank you for your beautiful questions. That was lovely.
Thank you for listening to the Magic and Mindfulness podcast, the podcast designed for the modern mystic and spiritually curious. This season, creative production is by Emily Lasbury and co-production by George Lasbury. If you'd like to stay connected to what we're up to, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Magic and Mindfulness, and maybe share these episodes with a friend or give us a review or subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. This helps us to keep spreading the message and light work that we do. We appreciate every single one of you that tunes in. So stay well, stay safe, and see you soon.